RadioMD.com. Dr. Pam Peek, founder of the Peak Performance Center, and Michelle King Robson, founder of EmpowHer.com, cut through the confusion to discuss all things her. This is Her Radio on Radio MD.
Hey there. Oh my gosh, we're going to be talking about something wild and crazy today, Michelle. Are you ready?
What?
Labia reduction surgery. My legs are crossed. I'm just saying.
Oh, come on.
Come on. Okay, Dr. Robert Cohen is a diplomat of the American Board of Plastic Surgery and the medical director of the Scottsdale Center for Plastic Surgery in Paradise Valley, Arizona. Dr. Cohen, what the heck is labia reduction surgery, and why would a woman need it?
Hi. Well, basically, for people who don't understand the anatomy very well, the vaginal area has two sets of labia, the labia majora, which is the outer part, and the labia minora, which is the inner part. And the inner part, in some women, sticks out too far and can either cause discomfort when riding a bicycle or wearing tight clothes or during sexual intercourse. And for some people, they just don't like the way it looks. They can stick out too far and cause embarrassment. And for a lot of women, it's a combination of those two issues that lead them to seek surgery for this problem.
Now, is this an age-related thing? I mean, is it menopause that brings a lot of this on? What's the age distribution for something like this? I mean, do 20-year-olds have an issue?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I'll see younger patients who have particularly large labia that really bother them and get in the way. I see some patients where it's changed from childbirth, and some people it just changes from age and time. I think the biggest reason this has become a more common procedure than it was, let's say, 15, 20 years ago is that people used to have more pubic hair, and now that it's become more common to have Brazilian waxing and that kind of thing, the labia are a lot more exposed, and they're more prone to rubbing or being irritated by clothes than in the old days when people had a lot more pubic hair.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so what's involved? What's involved with the surgery? What do you actually do?
So the surgery is actually, if you know what you're doing, it's a relatively straightforward surgery. There's different techniques. The technique I use is developed by a surgeon named Gary Alter in California, and it's what's called a wedge resection, where you're basically wedging out almost a pie-shaped area of the central labia on each side and closing things up. So rather than having a long scar that runs down the edge of the labia, it's a relatively hidden scar that runs from the inside to the outside of the inner labia. So it's a very anatomical repair where things look back to normal. You can take out a lot of the extra tissue and still have a very natural-looking result, to the point where I've had some patients who told me that they went to see their gynecologist and they didn't even realize they had the surgery after they'd been healed up for a while. So it can be done in a very natural way.
So how long does the procedure take?
Obviously, it depends on the surgeon. I usually schedule a surgery for about an hour to an hour and a half. And I usually do it under general anesthesia just because a lot of patients just prefer to be completely asleep, but I can do it under sedation. I've even done it under pure local anesthesia where I just numb patients up. That's less common just because, again, it can be a little bit of a sensitive area.
Right. How painful is it?
Yeah, I know. What's the healing like?
I would say it varies dramatically patient to patient, but on average, it's not too bad. Most patients, do icing and things like that after surgery, and they'll say that they're kind of sore and a little achy in that area, but most patients are back to work within a few days to a week. Occasionally, I have a patient who's sore a fair amount longer, but it's a lot less common. And then the main restrictions I have on patients would be, I don't want them to engage in sexual intercourse, ride a bicycle, anything that can cause trauma to that area for about 6 weeks while things are healing up. And then they can get back to those activities at around 6 weeks as long as they're careful and it's not causing too much discomfort.
It's interesting. In a lot of the work I've done, I've noticed that when people are obese and then they drop a boatload of weight, a woman, they have that issue. It's almost as though they were, as it were, extended there, and now they've dropped the weight, and they've complained that it doesn't quite, bounce back. And I would say that the longer they were obese, the more they have that issue, number one. And number two, the older they are, especially as they're hitting close to menopause. So that was another thing that hit me.
I've seen definitely patients who are postmenopausal or patients I've seen that are in their their 50s, 60s and up, usually the tissues won't be quite as elastic. Just like anywhere else in the body, you start losing tissue elasticity over time. As far as the, you know, the weight loss patients, I haven't seen that personally that commonly, but, you know, that it could be true. I do find that this doesn't seem to be directly related to weight in many cases. It just, some people have bigger labia, some people have smaller labia, and the ones that have bigger labia, it can sometimes cause discomfort or bother them, and it's a relatively straightforward procedure to fix. So people usually have the surgery extremely happy afterwards. It's a pretty low-maintenance recovery, and once it's fixed, it usually stays fixed.
The interesting part about this is that women don't realize that no two women look the same.
That is true.
And yeah, it's really
so
fascinating.
True. So true.
Go ahead.
I think a lot of women come in and say, oh, you know, is this normal? And I have to explain to them, there's a very wide range of what normal is, and there's a lot of variety out there. So, you know, people get maybe used to seeing, like, one particular image of what they think is normal, but that, like you said, there's a wide variety. So if somebody's happy and it's not bothering them, you know, they shouldn't be having surgery. But if it's something that's causing discomfort or they're really uncomfortable with how things look, then they can consider doing the surgery. So obviously there's not one exact labia appearance that's normal. I think people need to understand there is a wide range.
Exactly. I think that's the biggest issue that women face, because they get something in their head of this is how it should look, and that's not the case. But let's talk about sexual function. Is sexual function still the same after the surgery?
Yeah, I mean, that the inner labia don't have a major impact on sexual function. The area, obviously, when you get started, you can get higher up in the clitoral area, and it's very, very important nerves there. I try to stay away from that area during the surgery. What I've heard from some women is that when they had excess labial tissue, it would catch or pull when they were having intercourse and could be uncomfortable, and after the surgery, it was more comfortable for them. But I wouldn't promote the surgery as something, you know, specifically to improve sexual activity. I definitely haven't had any patients report any negative sexual function, and some have said it's actually better. So I think it's, you know, it's one of those things where every patient's a little bit different, but I don't worry much when I do the surgery about making things worse. Let's put it that way.
Okay. And insurance classically doesn't cover this, or what?
As far as I know, insurance does not cover this. I'm not on an insurance plan, so it's possible somebody with a very severe problem, if they were having issues with pain and that kind of thing, maybe certain insurances might cover it, but not as far as I know.
Roughly,
so
what does
range
it cost?
The price, the price range. That's it.
Yeah. Look, Michelle's got her checkbook out. Come on.
And to be honest, I don't know the pricing exactly off the top of my head, and it'll vary widely surgeon to surgeon, and whether you do it under general anesthesia or under local anesthesia. Yeah. I would expect it to be in the range of a few thousand dollars plus minus, but not exorbitant, because you don't have any, like, for example, if you're having a breast augmentation, you have to buy implants, that kind of thing. With this surgery, you're just rearranging the natural tissues. So the costs are relatively fixed, and it's kind of a one-time, you do the surgery, and unless there's a major change, like another pregnancy or something, you're probably not going to have it done again, like a facelift or something else that can change with gravity over time.
And it's outpatient, right?
Yeah, outpatient surgery for sure. So you have a surgery, and then you can go home that day.
What's the relationship between pregnancy and having this issue? In other words, you know, when you have a vag delivery or whatever else, does that exacerbate this, or is there any relationship?
It can. It doesn't always. It depends on the patient. It depends on how many pregnancies they have and the anatomy. So there's a lot of variation there. But I do see patients who say that things have changed since their pregnancies, and this wasn't an issue before, and now it has become an issue. So that's
my goodness. Well,
although
this
there's some
is
patients,
just
like I said, who are young, who've never had kids, where they just happen to be born with large labia.
Well, this has been fantastic. We've been talking to Dr. Robert Cohen, who is a plastic surgeon who's really given us the A to Z on labial reduction surgery, labiaplasty. Yeah, ladies, you heard it here. It's real. And Dr. Cohen has just been phenomenal in helping us understand what this is all about. Thank you for being on Her Radio. I'm Dr. Pam Peek with Michelle King-Robeson.
You're listening to Her Radio. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and if you have a health question that you want to ask Dr. Peek or myself, you can email us at askher@radiomd.com. Stay well.